Okay, welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz of the CFRU News team. And Adam, I think I have a new gig in mind because I heard that Campbell's Soup is designed in Canada, so I really want to become a soup designer now. I guess it's like being an influencer, but you're just designing soups.
Wait, is this like you design the cans, or you design like what's the soup is? Like make up a new soup? Like,
that's the question. I mean, in my old neighborhood, there was a ton of people that worked at the Campbell's plant, but I know it's been gone for a long time. So rather than being made here, it's just designed here now. So
yeah, spicy turkey and green bean. There's a free idea.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Liking that. Soups.
All right.
I'm going to design that and take credit.
I'm mostly a chunky soup guy, although they changed the recipes a few years ago, and now I think they suck. But
true
anyway,
this
isn't a soup review show.
Yet.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be a young man I think we're going to be hearing a lot from in the future. Mike Schreiner, the Green Party of Ontario leader. Obviously, we've done 505 episodes. Mike's done 407 of them. almost. Anyway, he's going to join us to talk about why he should be reelected here in Guelph and why he thinks Doug Ford is vulnerable this election. That's going to be at the bottom half of the hour. Before that, we're going to talk about a few news items from the last week, including healthcare. It's an election issue, sure. But what is the current state of our healthcare system, and what does it need beyond the platitudes of the political parties? But first, let's just say it. It's a trade war. It was over. I mean, I feel like I predicted it somewhere that we were not going to have a trade war because Donald Trump, being both arsonist and fire chief, would put out his own fire before... I mean, first of all, he signs the thing on Saturday, signs the tariffs while between rounds of golf, I assume. And then, you know, he gets on the phone with Trudeau Monday morning, and the Mexico president, Sheinbaum, on Monday morning. And then it's announced he's got a deal with Sheinbaum. And then he gets on the phone with Trudeau again. It's announced he has a deal with Trudeau. Probably felt... I don't know what you call it when you eat too much McDonald's and you can't sleep at night, but he got that feeling when the Dow went down 600 points first thing on Monday morning. So
I think it's called Trumpitis. It is now.
It should be. But still, I mean, this is the most predictable disaster there ever was, and it's still not over yet because we're going to go through all of this again in 30 days.
That's it, right? This disaster, barring the next disaster, it's only been a couple of weeks, and it feels like a very, very long time. Like, I get up in the morning now, and I'm like, what the f... Sorry.
We're now in year 48 of Trump's second term.
Yeah. It's like, what has he done this... It's the first thing out of the gate, and it's... I get up really early, too. I'm like, what the heck? So, yeah, it was... I suspected when there was this... makings of a deal with Mexico. I don't even know what the deal is. He pulls back, and then I happened to catch his tweets like, you know, if Canada just becomes the 51st state, this goes away. It's like, so, you know, you're left saying, what is this really about? Drugs, migrants, us ripping them off,
allegedly
treating them unfairly, who knows?
Allegedly,
like, yeah, we don't know. And then it's about being, you know, if they just became the first 51st state, not like if, you know, Gaza is going to be the Riviera of the Middle East. That is the mentality. But some things are happening which are interesting that probably should have happened, like interprovincial trade. That seems to have bumped that into gear. And I think folks forget, or they probably don't even know that that's a thing, the amount of barriers between provinces. And I'm not saying it's going to go away overnight, but it sounds like it's rapid speed after years and years of humming and hawing about it. So that's something. And we're getting a fentanyl czar.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure Trump wouldn't well, I probably wouldn't understand what a rapporteur was, but it's too much associated with the UN. So we're not getting a functional rapporteur.
An interlocutor is the
An
term
interlocutor.
that David McGinty used, who I forgot David Dalton's brother David
Yeah.
from the federal government. But yeah, it's an interlocutor between the Canada and US government to engage in the fight against fentanyl, 39 or 43 pounds of which entered Canada into the US last year. Take a guess how much fentanyl went from the US to Canada.
Many, many more times that.
882 pounds. And here's some fun statistics too. The number of migrants that went from Canada to the US, 8,644. How many people illegally entered Canada from the US, do you think?
Probably like 10,000.
28,000.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, people brought up the guns, and rightly so. It's let me find my guns number. It's 30,000 illegal guns from the U.S. to Canada, and I mean that's fine to bring that
sorry,
up.
And that's intercepted. Like, this is guns that you found.
That's okay. Intercepted. Yeah. We have no idea how many guns we don't. I mean, we.
I thought it was an estimate, maybe, of like how many
It's an unknown, and it's to borrow another phrase, but it's. This is from the U.S. Border Patrol. This is their statistics.
Yeah.
30,000 guns. I want to say 8 times as much fentanyl, nearly 9 times as much fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what, 4 times as many people? And we're the problem? So it's I don't even know what to say now.
Well, I mean, it just proves that it's not about that.
No,
it's not. Trying to figure out whether he's coming up with this and then it's kind of being orchestrated for him to say.
Because
you can tell when Trump's reading and when he's spitballing.
And when he's riffing. When he's reading
when he's riffing. Like the Gaza business.
It's called the weave. Yeah,
the weave. Like the punt or something. I don't know. And Netanyahu is yucking it up with that whole thing. He's loving it. Like, oh, it's a great idea. God. Like, oh, yeah. Okay,
oh, I just wanted to smack that smirk off his face. You can call that anti-Semitic if you want, but.
Well, no, you're not wrong, because it was, you could tell he was enjoying himself, and I'm not sure if it was more so like, where is he going to go with this? But he was like, and I'm comparing the two because the structurally the same. Trump will read something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering whether it's prepared for him by somebody in the machine behind the scenes, whether it's his idea is prepared or somebody is doing this for him. Because we know in your favorite guy in the world and mine too, Elon Musk's case, he seems to have free reign with stuff right now. He's just right into it with his team of nerds taking systems apart in that. And that's huge overreach, completely unprecedented. We know that corporations are tied to the American government. That's just how it works, and to a degree in Canada too. This is totally, totally different. Now, Musk hasn't really commented on this trade war, right?
No.
Sounds like a Trump project rather than a Musk project. There's got to be some overlap somewhere though, right?
Well, with Doug Ford canceling. He's busy ransacking the Treasury.
Oh, yeah. USAID, the Treasury. Like, it's just... It's unbelievable. That's what I was saying every day when I get up. It's like, what's going on in America? Like, oh my, beyond what affects us, it's just everyone. And the tariffs have stayed on with China. Of the three that were going to be punished by Trump, I guess, that China's tariffs stayed on. So you want to mess with Xi? Like, I don't know.
Well, this is the weird thing, right? He loves Xi, hates China.
Mm.
It's the bizarre thing. But you mentioned Doug Ford, who got caught in a hot mic saying, I love Donald Trump, but he yanked me in the back. Or whatever he said about, like, he took out the knife and effing
put
yanked
it straight
me in the
into
back.
My heart. Yeah.
Yeah. And
but
and
I love him so much. God forgive him.
It's so, I mean, I was having Rob flashbacks, but.
The election stuff writes itself, though, right? It just writes itself. You're writing, the script is being written. Within a day, right? There was that ad. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, but
good,
I mean,
good work, say comms. Yeah.
Say what you want about the Liberal party right now. The comms game is on point.
Mm-hmm.
Although the conservatives tried to hit them back with like Bonnie Crombie hates Brampton, but which like 4 seconds of Bonnie Hop 4 seconds of Bonnie Crombie saying, I don't care about Brampton. I don't live there or something to that effect, which, fair enough. She was the mayor of Mississauga. But yeah, the Doug reaction, because this is the thing that really grinds my gears. It's like Doug Ford was all in on Trump. And it's like Trump was talking about this stuff all the time, about like using tariffs and doing, and this is the other thing about it too. His core idea, which is they will get rid of income tax and replace it with revenue from tariffs. He literally thinks tariffs are a tax on other countries. And if we could tax other countries, if other presidents just had the balls to tax other countries, you could get rid of things like income tax. And between that and like gutting the federal government, everyone will be living on easy street. It's so bizarre. And it's one of these things Lawrence O'Donnell said during the last year during the election. He said, like, could one reporter just ask Donald Trump, what is a tariff? And how does he think tariffs work? Just to see him, like I don't think it would change many hearts and minds when it comes to voting for Donald Trump, but to have him sit there and explain this magical thinking of what he believes a tariff is and what it does, I think would be very informative to help get to the bottom of understanding what is exactly going on here.
Yeah, because when he talks about this new golden era, new golden age for America, but the last golden age was the turn of the like into the 20th century, which was also peak tariff time when nations did that on a regular basis, and
That's
then
right.
around a bit later on, let's say the 30s, at least between Canada and U.S., a sort of tariff-free relationship was established, but then also in Laurier times, so the it doesn't matter. I don't want to get too carried away with that, but I'm just saying his frame of reference, I think, harkens back to that because there are also a lot of elements of what he talks about that are, shades of manifest destiny. In almost everything he says, whether it's Gaza or Panama or us being Canada, it's in that mindset. Like he's a throwback, but like way back. Like to his probably his grandparents' era, right? But just going back to what you're saying about the media there, like is somebody going to challenge him? Interesting comment from Paul Krugman, ex of New York Times, talking about he was accusing the New York Times of trying to sane-wash Trump, just sort of presenting what he says without comment, which is how you're really supposed to do the news. But actually, Global News did a good job of it tonight, the way they were like, there's a little bit of a tone there where it's like he's
The
saying
boy ain't
this, and it's
quite
like,
right.
can you actually believe what he's saying? They didn't say that outright, but it's rather than just kind of presenting it like, yeah, he's saying, we're gonna turn Gaza into a great place and everybody should just move. Again, going back to that whole just clearing people out and making it like it's a real estate deal rather than sort of the ancestral lands of these people, because he doesn't get it. He
Yeah,
literally does not get it. Like,
We don't have time to get into it, but the whole thing about like making Gaza the Riviera of the Middle East,
oh,
like, I mean, it just harkens back to lifestyles of the rich and famous. When you like
yeah.
you when you when you say Riviera, you hear Robin Leach's accent saying, "In the Riviera, where the rich and famous play, we're gonna hang out with David Hasselhoff and his Beamer." And I think that was more Rupert Murdoch than Robin Leach,
I
but
bet you he really liked that show.
well,
Because he obviously
he
doesn't
was.
watch Border Security, right? He watches he watched Lifestyles, the Rich and Famous. He was
He was
probably on
on
it. I
Lifestyles.
was
I've
gonna
seen
say,
clips
there
of
you
Robin
go.
Leach interviewing him. He was like a
Look at
regular. He
these
was like
beautiful jewels on Ivanka.
he was a recurring character on that show.
Oh, there you go.
So that's about as much sense as we can make of anything going on in Washington, D.C. right now. Meanwhile, here in Ontario, there is an election going on. You may have heard about it. One of the issues, obviously, is healthcare. Hasn't got a lot of play with the tariff war, but. And things like affordability and housing, but these things are all kind of tied together because of social determinants of housing, which is a phrase you may have heard. It just means if you're poor, if you live in a food desert, if you don't have access to recreation, if you have chronic illness and you can't easily afford your medications, these are all kind of social determinants of health. So the affordability issue is inextricably tied to healthcare. So it's interesting to look at the healthcare situation. And Mike Schreiner's going to get into this when we talk to him in the interview, that, you know, you have hospitals that are taking on debt or borrowing in order to cover costs. Their costs have increased. So we just wanted to take a quick, well, not a quick moment, but a couple of minutes here to talk about healthcare as an issue. Not what the parties are talking about healthcare, but talking about the real sort of what is going on the ground in hospitals in Ontario. And what is going on is, well, not good.
No, definitely not. And it hasn't been for a long time. And this is one of those things where, well, I was to say the powers that be, but Ford can say, oh, you know, the Liberals, he can dump on them. And he wouldn't be incorrect in that.
No.
Because I've mentioned this several times, several places about my sort of peak ER visits with as a caregiver. It was Liberals at both levels, provincial and federal, and it was a mess. The thing is, when you get elected and promise that that mess is going to go away, aka we will end hallway healthcare, and yet the stories, anecdotal and otherwise, are that it is absolutely worse. Now, you had Adam had mentioned to me, and I'll mention to you folks as well. There's a really good, it's kind of a two-part on the CBC talking about. And this was a new word to me, so the word of the week is locum, a system of locum doctors who will, it's kind of like being an itinerant doctor where you are hired to go to different places to fill in gaps in healthcare.
Yeah, you're a
And
traveling doctor.
it was established as a temporary thing during COVID, but has, as with lots of temporary things like income tax, it's become kind of permanent because there's obviously, lots of things going on beyond the government starving the system of money, in that it's very difficult to get doctors into rural and remote areas. And speaking to that as well, in the area in question, particularly St. Joe's Island and Manitoulin, I lived up there for a time, a brief time. It was my last year, let's call it half a year anyway. Doesn't matter. But even back then, this is a while ago. It was very difficult. I had more than one occasion to drive some to the hospital, believe it or not, and had to drive into Sault Ste. Marie because there's nothing going on. So the services weren't there then. If you look on Google Maps, the place looks the same. The services aren't there now. We have an aging population, all of that. And it's not impossible to retain people, but it's very difficult. So there needs to be an incentive. And this locum system is like they pay doctors extra to go in. I think it's as high as 250 an hour, which sounds like a lot, but in the scheme of what's paid for in healthcare, it's probably not that much.
Well, I mean, there's also travel, and I mean, it's not like going from Vaughan to Burlington. So it's not easy, especially in winter and everything.
Oh, it's hellish up there.
Yeah,
It really is. To drive around, I mean, winter's nice, but
yeah, we like winter.
But try and get an ambulance through that, right? And
Yeah,
then you have to go like an hour and a half. Like, it's just not.
I mean, again, the important part here is, like, since 2008, Ontario's spending per capita has been at the bottom or near the bottom amongst all the provinces in Canada. And when you're talking about cold hard numbers, this is like 400 4 4 $4,889 per capita. So essentially every person in Ontario is getting $5,000 worth of health care, essentially. And that's about 15.2% lower than the average of provinces across Canada. That's from the FAO report about this time last year. So I mean, there's a lot going on here, because you'll hear from the provincial government and they'll say, like, we're putting more money into health care. Okay, great, but it is not getting us even to the baseline average. We are paying below the average still on health care. And what I find interesting about this is a lot of this is anecdotal. And you talked about your issues. I could talk about issues I've had at the hospital. Everybody can talk about the issues they've had at the hospital. Like, we have Louis Marshall Hospital up the road in Mount Forest that is closed like a dozen times for like a 24-hour period. Not the whole hospital, but the emergency department. They had to close down the emergency department like a dozen times in the last year and a half because they just didn't have the staff. And I think you could probably, I mean, Mount Forest is a town, but it's closer to a rural hospital than Guelph General is. So And then speaking of Guelph General, you have like this, you know, they're starting the improvements to the ER now. That's been in the process for 10 years.
Oof. Yeah.
They're talking about a hospital. I mean, a lot of people you talk to on the street in Guelph will say we need a hospital now. Well, they're just at phase one of new hospital development. And there's like four phases. And we don't even start talking about building the darn thing until they have a selection process. So that's at least two phases away. You know, up the road in Kitchener-Waterloo, they just chose the site for the new combined Grand River St. Mary's Hospital, which they just chose the site. They haven't even started construction yet. They have to get the funding and the fundraising. So that's probably 10 years away. And they're 10 years away up the road after knowing where they want to build the hospital. Imagine how far away they are from a new hospital in Guelph when we have no idea where it's going to be. So it's there's this definite feeling that no matter how much money we're throwing at healthcare, it is still like tremendously under-resourced. And I think this is, if there's a story that needs to be told, it's why are we putting more money in and it's still underfunded? Why are we putting more money in and it doesn't seem to change? It just seems to get worse. And I mean, a lot of this is through government incompetence too. We could talk about Bill 124, which probably is responsible, not for all the dent in terms of this extra deficit that hospitals are carrying, but probably a lot of it, since there's like 6 years of back pay for nursing staff and other staff, like that wasn't purposefully inflicted by the provincial government for fighting a losing battle in court for years over 124. But there is something here that we kind of fundamentally need to understand about how things are funded, why they're not funded to the to our satisfaction, and why money seems to be going into a black hole, and things can seem to keep getting worse.
That's it. And just to clarify, and I'll do this for the both of us, I have full respect for the people at Guelph General, and you saw the same things when you were in there too, Adam. It's
Absolutely.
just like
Absolutely.
the amount of, that they do with the resources that they have, because you can tell that they're maxed out, is amazing.
Yes.
So we would all love to have the magic wand. I did back then. I was like, you cannot pay these people enough for what they do. But part of the problem is that there isn't enough of them. Resources are taxed. I don't know if it's still the same, Adam, and I've said this before. The floor that I was on, there was no washrooms for people visiting. Like, what, just simple things like that were missing. This is structural stuff that should be not a problem, but yet it was. And part of the issue we have with the, well, the current government, or maybe soon to not be the government anymore, is that I feel, and this is an opinion piece, and I think a lot of people back me on this, is that the please the friends thing bleeds into everything with them. With these conservatives, it's enriching people beyond, and they don't like unions. So that business you were
No.
saying about the nurses, why were they doing that with the nurses? Because they're union and they don't like that. They don't like being told what they have to do. So it's easier, but it also helps the pals when you pay for agency nurses, because you probably don't have to scratch too far. And I'm not libeling myself here. You will find, if you look, there are connections between any agency like that, conservatives, intertwined. They're interlinked. And that is a massive issue. That is like, when you're talking about the black hole of money, to me, I think that's where a lot of it is going.
Well, yeah, you look at the solutions, the band-aid solutions, like giving more power to pharmacists, and maybe pharmacists should have like a bit more
To a
freedom
degree.
to dole out. But I mean, who does that immediately benefit, right? It's the, you know, the Shoppers Drug
Shoppers.
Mart.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
That's what it's
which,
about,
yeah.
right?
Oh,
And
for sure.
it's fine until somebody's misdiagnosed,
Yeah.
right?
I mean, I remember my mom being a diabetic, you know, running out of medicine, you know, needing a refill and like having to wait. It's the weekend. You have to wait for the doctor to be in the office, the doctor that has to fax it to the pharmacy and blah. I mean, yeah, maybe cutting out the doctor, and if you need like a last minute refill or prescription, that's okay. But the other thing too is, the short-sightedness of healthcare too. And I was at the Board of Health meeting today and getting into some of this, the social determinants of health. Like, how many healthcare things could we nip in the bud if people just had enough money in their pocket that they could afford three nutritious meals a day with fresh produce and meat
and a roof
over their heads, someplace comfortable to sleep. Yeah. If they lived within a 10 minute walk of someplace they could buy food that wasn't deep fried. It's, you know, there are all these things. If, you know, 2.5 million people in Ontario don't have a family doctor, and that's kind of where, I mean, I know when my mom had her heart issue, it was the family doctor who spotted it.
Yes.
When she went in for her regular checkup because she was a diabetic. So, you know, 4.4 million people in the next few years it'll go up to 14.4 million people without a family doctor. We saw that incident in Walkerton where people were lined up in a driving blizzard.
1,000 people
for like
500 spots.
Hope in hell of getting like in the dark of the morning in Walkerton in a snowstorm.
That's the thing with this money that dropped right at the beginning of the election. That's nothing to do with the election. 1.4 billion to get 2 million families, I think was they said 2 million families over 4 years into family doctors. But there's nothing backing it. Because question one, where are they coming from? You can't just pull them out of the ether. Where do they come from? Are they going to be international doctors? That's probably not a bad idea. But in that article we were talking about, that doctor that came from Nigeria that's working in Little Current, he worked as a PSW and a medical clerk for 7 years before he could get approved to be a doctor in Canada.
Could have went to medical school again.
Yep. And that kind of, that harkens back again, and talking about Trump being retro, there is some... To be credentialed as a doctor was always a very difficult thing in Canada. I don't know if it's as bad now, but I mean, it's obviously, there are still some issues. But there was a lock in that. I mean, I thought we went to British doctors because of my family origins, but I think a lot of it to do is like somebody from the UK comes, you become a doctor right away. You come from certain other countries, you don't become a doctor right away. Now, why is that? And Canada was willing to accept so many nurses from the Caribbean in the 60s because my neighborhood was full of people who had come to Canada to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I really knew about that. It's like, why is the nurse Jamaican or whatever? It's because, so they were willing to give on that. Mm-hmm. That's the same era where the temporary foreign worker program was established, or the first one anyway. But doctors, there's a lock on doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that is lifted, where are they going to come from? And are they going to go to Little Current? Are they going to come to Guelph, the Riviera of Wellington County?
I don't know. On the banks of the beautiful Speed and Grand Rivers, or Aramosa Rivers, I should say. We obviously don't have all the answers, don't even know most of the questions, but we know that we do have questions for Mike Schreiner, and we're going to ask them coming up after the break. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
And in keeping with our tradition of wild instrumentals, that song is from an album called Your Concurrence in the Above is Assumed. How do these kids come up with these album titles? I don't know. Anyway, the song was Doomsday.
Yikes.
Yeah, but yeah, it's not as ominous as it sounds, which was what kind of made the title funny. I'm like, Doomsday? Oh, I think I could get into that. Doomsday's not sounding so bad with that.
I mean, not to set to that score. But, I mean, Doomsday in this case is February the 27th. That is Election Day. Mike Schreiner hopes that you will decide that he is worth electing to a third term as Guelph's member of provincial parliament. He is in the running again. He is the incumbent. So we thought maybe it would make sense as we were sort of organizing these interviews. Let's kick things off with the incumbent, who people know fairly well at this point, although in this interview, view. I try to drill Mike a bit on the vulnerabilities of Doug Ford. I mean, he is a party leader after all, and the always long shot chance that the Green Party might add seats in this election. Mike certainly sounds hopeful. I will let him explain himself, though. So we will just throw it to our election interview with Mike Schreiner starting right now. Okay, Mike Schreiner, thank you for joining us once again.
Hey Adam, it's always a pleasure to join you.
When you're kind of going door to door as this election is underway, and I'm sure it's inevitably asked the question, like, what is this election about? For you, what is this election about when you're thinking about things?
Well, I think this election and what I'm hearing at the door is a referendum on Doug Ford's failure to address the housing crisis, the fact that our healthcare system's on the verge of collapse. Overcrowded classrooms, his attack on nature and people's desire to want to protect the places we love in Ontario. And then finally, obviously, the tariff threat from Trump keeps coming up as well. And mostly associated with that is just anger that the premier is so selfish that he would put his job ahead of your job. This is a moment when we should be working across party lines, jurisdictional and sectoral lines to have a united front against Trump's tariff to protect Canadian workers, Canadian jobs, and Canadian companies. And instead, we're having a partisan election that's all about Doug Ford's job.
I mean, along with that is like we hear a lot about living in two different realities. I sometimes feel like we're living in two different elections. Doug Ford wants to make this an election about Donald Trump and tariffs and needing a strong mandate, whatever that means. And I think you and the other opposition leaders made the point. It's like, no, it's about Doug Ford's failings and all the things he has sort of failed to fix here in our own backyard. I guess which narrative wins out, and sort of what does it take for your narrative to win out in this and sort of make that convincing case to the voters?
Well, what I've been saying to people who are saying this election has to be about Doug Ford's failure to address healthcare, and I'm saying folks who are on the front lines, doctors, nurses, frontline healthcare workers, need to be talking about how our healthcare system's on the verge of collapse. 2.5 million people without a family doctor. Hospitals, particularly in rural parts of the province, taking out lines of credit just to be able to meet payroll, having unprecedented numbers of emergency department closures, long wait lists for people to access mental health services or long-term care, the inadequacy of our home and community care. I mean, we're looking at the fact that over 80,000 people in Ontario are experiencing homelessness right now. A whole generation of young people wondering if they'll ever be able to own a home. And yet Doug Ford says no to changing zoning rules to make it easier and cheaper to build housing, no to protecting renters, no to building deeply affordable nonprofit co-op and supportive housing. I've been telling educators, like, you have to let people know the state of our schools and the fact that Doug Ford has cut per capita funding by $1,500 per student. The fact that our post-secondary education sector is the lowest funded in the entire country. And then I look at the systematic dismantling of the environmental assessment process, conservation authorities, wetlands protection. And, just this past summer, the floods in the GTA cost $1.3 billion per hour. And yet the premier wants to waste billions building Highway 413 when we got a perfectly good highway next to it. Billions wanting to open land up for development to benefit speculators when he's failing to actually build homes where we already have infrastructure in place. And so, it's incumbent upon me as an opposition leader to hold the premier accountable for that. But I also think we need people in our communities who are experiencing the failings of this government each and every day to speak out as well.
Is there something to be said about the difficulty in putting a narrative together that's sort of indictable against Doug Ford in that, a lot of the problems we're seeing with housing, like that's decades of neglect, just like different issues piled on each other over years and years and years. And then you have the central part of Doug Ford, which is his failure to act in, I guess, 7 years, his failure to address it. But then we have this new wrinkle in Donald Trump, where if we start like losing jobs, and I mean here in Guelph with the auto sector, Linda Hasenfratz said that her business will be impacted by tariffs, and now we kind of have a new boogeyman we can put that blame on. And so I guess, is there a coherent case to be made against Doug Ford when the pressures are sort of all over the place?
First of all, I think Doug Ford needs to be held accountable for the fact that your life's gotten worse over the last 7 years. Can't find a home that you can afford, can't access healthcare services, overcrowded classrooms, the dismantling of the protections of the places we love. And he's abandoned his post when it comes to dealing with Trump. Like, we should be bringing the legislature, recalling it this week, to pass measures to protect companies like those in the auto sector. But we can't even do that until after February 27th, because Doug Ford has dissolved the legislature to call an election that's all about Doug Ford being selfish about wanting to protect his own job over your job. I mean, the Ford government's been looking for an excuse to call an early election for about 6 months now. And so for him to abandon his post in a time of need is the exact same way he's abandoned the people of this province when it comes to doing his job around housing, healthcare, education, and environmental protections. And it's especially disturbing in Guelph because we're the fourth most vulnerable city in the entire country when it comes to the tariff threats, primarily because we depend so much on manufacturing. And it's not just Linamar, it's Linamar, Polycon, Hammond, Metalumen, like the list goes on and on. And our agriculture, our food and farming sector is deeply exposed as well. And as you know, the head of most of our major ag organizations are located here in Guelph as well. So Guelph is very vulnerable to these tariff threats. And as the MPP for Guelph, I would like to be at Queen's Park this week passing legislation to protect my constituents here in Guelph and people across Ontario. But Doug Ford has prevented that from happening because he's called an unnecessary, expensive election to protect his own job.
Not to come to Doug Ford's defense, but I mean the same point could be made about the House of Commons in Ottawa right now.
Oh, certainly it applies to the federal government as well. I mean, it's like it is so tough right now. We have federal parliament prorogued and a leadership contest for a new prime minister happening. And then in Ontario, you have an election called when the premier who was supposed to be chairing the Council of Premiers now abandons his post. So now we have instability at both the federal and provincial levels of government at a time when we need stability, at a time we need to show strength through unity. That's why I just find it so selfish and irresponsible that the premier would call this election, especially given the instability at the federal level.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that on the record too. I want to talk about campaigning a bit. And this is a thought I've had, no matter what level an election is happening, it's a lot of the same activists and campaigners, and a lot of the people who are working on your campaign are going to be working on Anne Marie's campaign when the federal election's called. And I'm curious about like the morale of not just the volunteers and the campaigners, but also your fellow Green candidates who, may have been like building their resumes, building their portfolios, going out and having those casual conversations with constituents, and then suddenly being like tossed into the deep end in the middle of winter, no less. What's the morale like out there for you and the people who are supporting you?
Well, first of all, Adam, I'll just start here in Guelph. Like, we launched the campaign here in Guelph on Writ Day, and great crowd out in the middle of the afternoon, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy. My volunteers, who I just want to thank so deeply, out knocking on doors and putting up signs. And we've really prioritized getting signs up on people's private property, because we really want to show the kind of support we have in the community. And so, you know, a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of people working hard in some pretty challenging conditions, like getting signs into frozen ground, for example.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, a new challenge we haven't had for a while. The first winter election in Ontario, I think since what, like early 80s, I believe. So, and as I travel around the province, and, you know, I've been to ridings, you know, obviously in Kitchener and Bruce Graham Sound and Bronwyn Wilton and Wellington Halton Hills, which isn't, you know, our region here. I was just up in Dufferin Caledon today. The snow drifts up in Parry Sound, Muskoka. Oh my gosh. But our candidates are pretty positive and enthused everywhere I go. And I'm especially seeing that in ridings outside of the GTA, where people are telling me that Doug Ford has abandoned rural Ontario, has abandoned ridings outside of the GTA, because he has spent so much time, energy, and money. $2.2 billion on a mega spa downtown Toronto, where people in Toronto don't even want. Hundreds of billions on a tunnel that he's proposing under the 401. $650 million for, you know, booze 1 year early. Millions of dollars to rip up bike lanes in Toronto. Meanwhile, you know, healthcare is not being properly funded, especially in rural communities. Overcrowded classrooms, homes people can't afford. And so I think there is real motivation, at least on the ground, among our candidates and volunteers to run strong green campaigns. And people have said to me, it's like, Mike, you're kind of like the leader of the official opposition, even though you're officially not the leader of the official opposition. And we want to see a larger green caucus at Queen's Park. And we want to see MPPs who are going to be the voice of their community, their riding, advocating for them at Queen's Park, not the leader's voice in their riding. And I think that message of electing strong local champions to be your advocate at Queen's Park, not to be the leader's voice in the riding, is really resonating in a number of ridings that I visited so far.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a general feeling that we talk about every election, but in terms of like turning that into votes, because I mean, there are a number of challenges. It's a winter election. It's a sort of last minute election. If you, again, to your point, we've been talking about it for months. There's so much chaos, and in chaos, people tend to rely on incumbency. But still, this isn't just the Mike show anymore. It's the Mike and Ashland show. So, you know, I think you've both won previous elections to an extent that, you know, you were outsiders who were promising to shake up the system. And I think, to your credit, you've delivered. But how does that translate beyond just the borders of Guelph and Kitchener Centre? I mean, there are a couple of other ridings where you've been close, but you know, the kind of general factors are running against you this election. So how do you turn that, I guess, that desire for change into actual votes at the ballot box?
Yeah, well, I think in Parry Sound, Muskoka, Matt Richter wants to finish what he started. He almost won in the last election, and our poll numbers show it a very tight race. And you're right, I think there is a little bit of incumbency advantage in a winter election, because it's harder to get people out knocking on doors when it's cold and snowy. But the number of volunteers, the energy in that riding is really inspiring and energizing. I look at Bronwyn Wilton, who's a councillor in Center Wellington, running in Wellington Halton Hills. I think we have a huge opportunity, strong numbers there as well. And in this case, you know, Ted Arnott has been the MPP there for, you know, 30 plus years, the longest MPP in the Ontario legislature. And the fact that he has stepped down, so there isn't an incumbent in that riding, I think gives us a huge opportunity. And, you know, Bronwyn is somebody who's highly respected, particularly in the food and farming sector, as well as the work she's done on council. And so we're seeing lots of momentum there. Same thing up in Bruce Graham Sound, where again, another riding Greens have historically done well in. I was just up there, and the incumbent in that riding's not running again. So I think taking advantage of some opportunities where there is not an incumbent running for re-election, where Greens have strong campaigns, gives me hope that we'll see the size of the Green caucus grow.
I want to play pundit for a minute about Wellington Halton Hills, because that is an interesting race, because I know there's a Liberal candidate coming as we're recording. or an NDP candidate coming as we're recording. But the two candidates who are in the race right now from the major parties, they're both Halton Hills city councillors, so both men, and they're both on the young side. I didn't realize Halton Hills city council had turned into a CW show, but I mean that would be a real coup, just speaking politically, for the Green Party to flip that from Ted Arnott's 30-year conservative MPP, Speaker of the House, Green Party. And I'm curious what that would mean in terms of like the overall green political movement, so to speak, to put that point on the board.
I think it would just say a writing that wants a local champion who's going to be their advocate at Queen's Park versus the leader's voice in the riding. And I think you saw that a bit with Ted. Like, I don't think he was Doug Ford's favorite conservative MPP.
No, it's right.
And very strong advocate for his riding. And I can tell you, Ted and I, over the years, have worked well together to advocate to deliver things for Guelph and Wellington. And so I think having somebody like Bronwyn be able to carry on that legacy would say a lot about the importance of, who the member is and what they can deliver for their community. And I also think, there is a bit of the maybe effect of Guelph. I think people in the county have seen, wow, Mike Schreiner's been able to deliver things for Guelph, funding for Guelph General Hospital, funding for permanent supportive housing, funding to, expand the veterinary program at the University of Guelph, among other things that I've been able to advocate for the community. And I think people would say, hey, we'd like a little bit of that in Wellington Halton Hills too. But also somebody who's going to speak out against Highway 413, for example, and say, hey, you know what? We don't want to waste money on this highway that threatens, our community, or the fact that Halton Hills Council voted against expansion of the gas plant that is in Halton Hills, because they want to protect their local air quality and they don't want to see the climate crisis get worse. And so to have somebody who can play that role of holding government accountable and especially opposing government when needed to reflect the wishes of the riding, but also to be able to work across party lines to get things done for the riding. I think that's exactly what Bronwyn would offer. And I think that's one of the reasons her numbers look so good in Wellington Halton Hills.
It'll be one to watch for sure. I do want to focus on Guelph stuff, though, because you're running for Guelph MPP. But I know that the city of Guelph has released their list of things that they want this election to be about. But in terms of Guelph priorities, what do you want this election to be about?
Well, addressing the housing crisis. I mean, when I knock on doors in Guelph and I ask people what their number one issue is, it's housing and affordability. The primary driver of the affordability crisis is housing. And so, I'm going to continue for us to build more homes here in Guelph that people can afford, going to continue to push hard for permanent supportive housing, deeply affordable nonprofit and co-op housing. Second one is healthcare. We obviously need a new hospital in Guelph. I mean, the fact that we have a portable as part of our emergency department, and we have been able, to the credit of the hospital leadership team and the board, we've been able to secure some funding to expand the special care nursery, to expand the emergency department. But those are band-aids to get us to a new hospital. And so I really want to finish what we've started in that regard. I'm, proud we've gotten through phase one approvals to start, doing the needs assessment. But, obviously I want to get us to site selection and then ultimately approval of a new hospital. I'm hearing from educators about just, the crisis we're seeing in our classrooms with overcrowded classrooms, understaffing, which is then leading to frustration and increasing levels of violence in our schools. And I think our students and educators deserve better than that. I think funding for infrastructure, some of that housing enabling infrastructure, but just ensuring, that municipalities, cities like Guelph have stable, predictable funding to deliver on the things that residents need, and in ways that don't require these huge property tax increases that we're seeing across the province because of all the downloading from the provincial government onto the backs of municipalities. And then finally, I would say, tons of people here in Guelph, they want nature protected. They want us to address the climate crisis in a way that, also addresses people's affordability concerns. I'm struck by how many, stop Highway 413 signs you see in Guelph. And so I think there's a real desire from folks I hear at the door to push back and reverse so many of the changes the Ford government has made to dismantle environmental protections.
All right, before we run out of time, I want to turn it on you a bit because we talked about Doug Ford's record. I want to talk about your record. What would you do differently from the last 7 years as MPP? Like, what have you learned from hindsight?
Yeah, Adam, I think the one thing I've really learned is just how hard it is to secure things for your riding, especially when you have a government that's really cut back on some of the key priorities. And so one of the things I'm proud of, but also recognize how hard it was to achieve, was the housing and healthcare funding we've received for permanent supportive housing. Mm. And when we first started doing that work, we thought we were going to end homelessness in Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, partly due to the pandemic and partly just due to the state of the housing crisis in Ontario in general, which, by the way, housing starts are down in Ontario and up in the rest of the country.
Yeah.
So it's particularly bad in Ontario. But even with the funding we've secured for permanent supportive housing, we haven't even come close to eliminating homelessness in Guelph. And I want to finish that job and I want to keep working on that issue. But I really thought, given, the Kindle project and the funding for Wyndham House, the work with Stepping Stone, I just thought we would have been further along in achieving that goal than we are right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to ask about the future to wrap up. It's February 28th. Doug Ford's been reelected. Maybe he doesn't have as big a majority as he did, but I mean, he got his mandate. What do you think that says about the state of politics in Ontario? And what do you think that says about sort of the state of the opposition that, in spite of everything, whether it's you or whether it's Merritt, whether it's Bonnie, you couldn't seal that deal against, I mean, and let's be honest, he's the least popular premier in the whole country.
Well, first of all, I'd say let's not presume the current premier is going to be the next premier. There's still a lot of weeks left in this election, and I'm going to continue to work super hard here in Guelph and across the province to, elect more Greens and to make sure that people understand Doug Ford's record and the kind of damage it's done to this province. So whoever the premier is on February 28th, the one thing I will do is I'm going to work hard for Guelph, whether I'm reelected or not. I love this city, and there's so much about Guelph that I love, and I think there's so much about Guelph that I think the rest of the province needs in terms of the kinds of caring community that we have here in Guelph. And, I'm hoping that people will reelect me and I can continue doing the work for the city I love. But if I'm not elected, I'm going to continue doing that work in some other capacity. And if I'm elected and Doug Ford is still the premier, I'm going to continue working hard for Guelph and holding, Doug Ford accountable or whoever the premier is accountable. And then if it's by some chance it's me, I'm sure people here in Guelph are going to hold me to be accountable.
I'm sure they will, but for now, if people want to help the cause in re-electing you or electing more Greens to Queen's Park, how can people reach out to you?
Well, I'd just say, reach out to GuelphGreens.ca. Stop by our campaign office, which is right across the street from the Guelph Farmers Market, where the old-fashioned lighting store was. Send us an email, give us a call. Come out, knock on some doors. Like, I think one of the best ways to be politically engaged and really understand what's happening in your community and what people need in your community, is to go to the door and have conversations with them. Everyone talks about social media and the importance of social media in politics and campaigns in today's world. And yes, you got to be active on social media, but nothing beats having a conversation with your neighbors at the door and really getting an understanding of what they need, how they want you to work hard for them. And so I would say, go to the doors and talk to your neighbors.
All right. Well, we will be putting that to the test once again on February 27th. But Mike Schreiner, good luck with the rest of the campaign. Thanks for talking to us.
Hey, thanks, Adam. And just always appreciate good, strong local journalism.
Okay. Once again, that was Mike Schreiner. Presently, we know there are four candidates in Guelph. The deadline to sign up is next Thursday, February the 13th. So there could be maybe more out there. But for now, we do know the four. We've been in touch with all four. And they are going to be on the show at some point, so stay tuned for the next couple of weeks. And of course, we will be on the air live for election night coverage as well. Oh.
So come on, Fringe, step up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to live through a Guelph election without Fringe.
No, I guess can't really. We call them Fringe, but it's alternative candidates now, I believe. So
Oh, this
because
PC,
of woke,
PC, PC woke nonsense. Anyway.
I don't know. Come on, alternative candidates.
That's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it. You can listen to us again by downloading it every Monday from our website at opensourcesguelph.com or on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through your favorite app like Apple, TuneIn, and Spotify. You can stay connected to us on the socials. We're on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire and we're on Twitter at OS underscore Guelph. I'll be back here on CFRU Wednesday at 3 p.m. for the movie review show that I co-host called End Credits. And you can also find me on Twitter and Insta at Adam A. Donaldson, Blue Sky 2, same address. Or you can go to my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
And I'm Scott Hertz on Facebook, Fascist Twitter, Blue Sky, and Mastodon. And if you'd like to revisit anything you've heard on this show or catch up on an episode you may have missed, all programs can be found in the CFRU archive at CFRU.ca.
Yes, and one of those great programs is coming up next here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. As for this program, Open Sources, we'll return next Thursday for another new edition and another new candidate interview, and we will see you then.